Well, I know a few Wednesday nights ago, I dealt with some of the educational philosophy things that we believe and promote and support as Christians, and especially as traditional Christian educators. And so this month, I wanted to kind of continue on that line, and I wanted to talk about really the rise of, you know, where did things begin to go a little bit different direction here in our country as far as education is concerned. And I want to spend some time talking about that. And I wanted to spend some time as well talking about some of the key people throughout history that really influenced the direction that our country is going in. I mean, you know, a few summers ago we did the coddling of the American mind, the emphasis on safetyism and all that, and you see these, you know, young people that are really being indoctrinated in ideas and philosophies that we don't believe are biblical or support the Bible, and you see entire generations, you know, of young people today that you wonder, why are they thinking the way they're thinking? Why are they focused on what they're focused on? Why do they think socialism, for example, and communism is such a wonderful thing? Why would they love to have a huge welfare system and they think capitalism is really a devilish, terrible system? And, you know, it's always funny, the people that are these multimillionaires and billionaires that always talk about how socialism is the greatest thing. I'm like, well, that's not how you made your millions, sir. So, but we'll get off of that for a minute. But why do we have these philosophies, and why do people just seem to, oh, it's just normal, it's accepted, it's what we should do? It's because starting back in about the mid-1700s on into the 1800s and then really in the 1900s, specific key steps were made to change things without even parents in America even knowing. One of the men we're going to talk about, hopefully one of these Sundays this month if we get there, is George Counts. George Counts, and he was one of the most influential men. I did a lot of research on him a few years ago. He's one of the most influential men in, as far as the textbooks that were in the public schools. And he pushed for it in the 1930s, and people thought he was a nut. You're crazy. They're never going to go for this. He tried to promote it publicly, and he tried to put forth his philosophies, really a socialistic mindset, and he got, you know, castigated and said, you're a nut job. We're never going to support that. So you know what he did? He then entered the field of education and began to write textbooks that would be used in public schools. So if the public and the populace think you're a moron or crazy man, well, then you just go and influence the next generation. Because parents have no idea what's going on in the school for the most part. They have no idea what's being taught for the most part. Now, I know not all public schools are equal. I know there's public schools in conservative areas. There's public schools in unconservative areas and so forth. But as far as the system of public education, it's not what it used to be in America. It's not what it used to be. And we're going to look at some men that really began that system, and I'm going to show you the philosophy that they had. People don't even think, oh, this is wonderful. We've got school for everybody. Well, why did they do that? It might shock you a little bit when you discover the literal reasons why some of these men wanted public education. And sure, it sounds great. I can send my kids to school for free, and it's wonderful. But when we look at the influences behind it, and then you see how it took several generations, maybe a decade or maybe 50 years, maybe a century later, and then it keeps getting and progressing on, and you see where we are today. Today, the public school system, there's good teachers in public schools. There's teachers that are creationists in public schools. I know some of them. They're good people. But the system itself promotes evolution, promotes humanism, and promotes socialism. That's just the facts. You can disagree, you can think I'm crazy, but that is the facts. The textbooks, what the teachers in legitimate teacher colleges, I know some don't, not every teacher goes to a teacher's college, but you know, you go to like Teachers College in Columbia and so forth. It is a purely atheistic, evolutionary, humanistic mindset that is being pushed down the throats of these teachers. And that's, they don't learn about history. They don't learn about other things. They're taught that America is a bad place. I've mentioned this before. If you look at the AP history curriculum for U.S. history, you know, oh, I got advanced placement in high school. I'm going to take AP U.S. history. Well, that's great. My kid's smart. You know what they teach in that class? You can go look at the curriculum yourself. They teach that America is an evil place. Now, here you are taking advanced placement American history, and they teach you that America's evil because they bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki and killed all those people. How dare they? While ignoring the fact that the Japanese were some of the most ruthless people ever in the history of this world that did not stop at anything and would massacre at all costs for the emperor. How many lives were saved by the dropping of those bombs? But we don't teach that. America's evil and mean. And then we wonder why Why does that mindset exist, that America's evil? Because for generations, we've taught them this. Just, America's bad, America's bad, America's bad. And, I mean, I could show you, but this has been going on for decades. And if we have time, I'll get into some other things. There's some books that have been written that if you really want to know things that are being taught in the public school system, again, not all public schools do this. There's conservative areas of the country with good people and good teachers. Then there's very liberal areas, and then there's the middle areas. But you can look at the curriculum. You can see the things that they're promoting, and parents have zero idea. Zero. They don't know. They don't look at what's being done. You could look at the reading lists, for example, that are in the high schools that came out with the Obama Common Core that he implemented. You go look at the reading lists that are required readings for high school. Some of that stuff, highly pornographic, for example, required reading. Or things like EPA requirements for insulation of a house. I tell you, when I was in high school, that's what I wanted to read. What the EPA thought about insulation levels in the house. Because, again, what are they promoting and shoving down their throats? Climate change. Because they don't call it global warming anymore. That's right. They realize that that people are picking up on that farce, so they have to change it to a new enticing title called climate change. And so they're just shoving it down their throats. We got to read all this and study all. What happened to just education and just learning? You know, the purpose in this country when it first began, and we're going to look at some of this, for education, you can go back and you can read it yourself. You can read what these people wrote. You can read the purposes of education was to learn to read so you could read the Bible. You know why they wanted their kids to be literate? They wanted them to go to the ministry colleges and learn how to be a pastor, learn how to preach. Now, that was the 1600s. Long gone are those days. And now we're going to look at some just little examples of, I mean, kids that were learning Greek at age 6. I mean, that, Pop, I can see you doing that. I mean, just knocking them out, you know. They were phenomenal. You know, today we're like, I'm 15. I don't know anything. I play the games. You know, it's a completely different mindset. And I'm not, not trying to be hateful or anything, but we have totally changed things around. And so we're going to look at where some of these roots came from. We're going to start with what education, I'm going to try to go quick, and I know you're laughing at that. What did it kind of used to be? And this is all general knowledge. I mean, if you take any kind of education course, you'll see some of this stuff, and maybe some of you have already studied these things before. Maybe some of you haven't. But it's good for us to know, why did this happen and where did it come from? How did we get here? So we can start with really, and I'm going to do the rise of public education, really start with New England. Let's just quickly go through some things. There were three types of schools in New England back in the 1600s. And again, we're going to deal with New England. Sorry, Ben. New England is the hotbed of liberalism. So can anything good come out of New England? Only Ben Joel Hobbs, right? And Hush Puppies. that we'll give Ben credit for that. So they've been so good this year, by the way. Very good. I've enjoyed them. I sneak him when he's not looking, but then he still sees me and just doesn't tell me. But that's okay. Good job, Ben. There's the one good thing out of New Hampshire, right? So anyway, there were several types of schools there. One was a dame school. Now, that would be like an older lady, for example, or a widow. And it was typically kids ages 6 to 8, 7 years old. And she would literally just have them at her home or something, and she would just teach them. So all the kids in the town, for example, would find, maybe that old widow or that old lady that was could really teach the kids when they'd all come to her house. And she would teach them the basics, and they focused on reading. And the goal was, we got to get them established in reading so they can move on from me and go on maybe to another, like a grammar school, and then eventually maybe get into Harvard or a ministry school, because that's what Harvard was. It was for the ministry. That's what they wanted for their children at that time. And then they could go to a reading school. Now, that was a little more formal than just, like a dame school. Was like, let's all go to the house, and she would teach us there. Maybe she had cookies. I don't know. I would go if she did. Reading and writing schools then were a little more formal. They had an actual hired teacher there, kind of a bona fide teacher that the community would all kind of chip in, and they would pay this guy a little, maybe it was £10 or just something minimal salary to just teach these kids, and he would have a formal time of reading and writing, and they would focus on penmanship. Wow. I'm not the neatest writer, and that's why I type everything. When I was in college, you have to write so fast. And, that was the old days in seminary when you didn't have a computer with you. I don't know, did you have a computer in your classroom? Some, about half of it. Yeah, we didn't get that privilege. My hand, I now have severe carpal tunnel. But writing and writing and writing. And my wife, my lovely, wonderful wife, Megan, because I was working so many hours, even before we got married, she was so gracious and she would type a lot of my notes for me, pages and pages of notes. She remembers those torturous days. She must have really loved me. I don't know why or how. But and then after we got married, I had 1 year left, and I was taking 20, 21 credits a semester and writing my thesis and working 40 hours a week, and she's typed all my notes. Just, what's Megan going to do today at home? Well, I don't know. Don't have any kids, and I'll type the notes. So she learned how to read my handwriting. I'm getting way off track here. My handwriting is horrible. And she, to this day, if anybody cannot read my writing, Caitlin, if you need to send a picture of my notes to Megan, she'll translate for you. My handwriting is not that great. I have to apologize. In school, I worked really hard. It was graded. But I don't know how you elementary teachers that are up there on the chalkboard, and they're just, it's just so beautiful and in a straight line. And I used to go in and look at Miss Devine, for example, and say, man, that is beautiful. And I'm over there, and the kids are looking. My word is looks like a 13. And I'm like, that's is. The kids are like, what's 13 there for? I'm like, is. The kids that have had me for a while, they got used to it, and they're like, oh, it's just, well, we can get it. We can translate him now. Penmanship's a needed thing. And by the way, you know, there, and this, you know, you can disagree with this, but there's people that really believe this. Why are they taking cursive out? And this is just a little side note. You know what our documents were written in that founded this country? They're written in cursive. So if you ever want to manipulate them and just hide the originals, anyway, that's just a mini conspiracy, but why do they hate cursive? Because it forces the kid to do something. It forces the kid to a standard. And of course, progressive education says we don't need a standard. That kid needs to express himself. So I'm a progressive writer. I have expressed my terrible handwriting in the ways that it comes out. But that's kind of the mindset there. We don't want a standard for these kids. They don't need cursive. They just, they don't neatness, whatever. They're all going to type stuff anyway. Well, that's true. They do type a lot of things, but there is something about being neat. I kind of missed that boat. I must have been daydreaming about basketball when the teacher was going over penmanship, but let's move from that. We had a formal teacher here, and they focused on penmanship, writing, and reading. Then there would be a Latin grammar school. Now, the first one was established in Boston. Now, don't let that confuse you. Public, not in the sense of a public school we say today. It's a little bit different than that. The public nature of this school, the word public and free, don't let that confuse you. Free or public in this time meant that some institution supported the school, some public institution supported that school so that they could offer or pay for a teacher to have this Latin type school. And so the first one was in Boston in 1636. It wasn't public in the sense that we think public school today, we think funded by the government. This wasn't the case. This is a, you know, maybe there was a company or a group of families or a group of businesses in the town that wanted, you know what, our kids need a place to go. They need a place to learn. They need someone that's qualified. So they would all chip in, for example, or they would publicly fund this teacher to be able to do that. And, you know, this is where you'd see some of those one-room schoolhouses and things of that nature. So the curriculum was very, what we would call a classical curriculum. There's even schools today that focus on a classical curriculum, you know, where they would learn, the students in high school, they love that first one. Geometry. Anybody take geometry? Aiden is back there shaking his head profusely. So I think your Algebra 2, you had geometry last year. No problem for him. He just aced it. People don't like geometry. I actually enjoyed it, but I'm weird. Because I like solving puzzles. Gamble does too. You know, proofs and logic of how do you get... to me, it really helped me in high school be able to think logically. I know kids hate it. They hate it because here's all these theorems and all these axioms and all these postulates, and they're like overwhelmed and we're done. I don't want to think at all. It's a good exercise for them. Why do I have to go from geometry teacher here? Given this and given this, then I'm going to say this and why and this and why. And there's, instead, you know, why is that important? If I'm going to make a statement, I need to know why I'm making that statement. Now, you see how that translates into life? Well, we just say whatever pops into our mind. Whatever. I believe this. Well, did you check it out? No. Why do you believe that? I don't know. I just like it. It feels good. Well, geometry removes all feelings and emotional reasoning. And it's based on facts. Step-by-step logic. It's very good for kids. So they did geometry, astronomy, geography, Latin. It was very rigorous. It was very traditional. as well. It was one room. Of course, you've heard of the one-room schoolhouse. The youngest would sit in the front. The older would be in the back. And you know what else they did, actually, in this Boston one, at least this one example? On Monday morning, they had a quiz. Know what the quiz was over? Church message. Boy. Yeah, that's good. They couldn't fail that quiz. They couldn't cheat around him. He was giving the message. How'd you like that? Boy, that's a little nervous right there, isn't it? So, I mean, most of y'all, I might need to do that to the students here. Instead of y'all sleeping when I preach on Sunday nights, maybe y'all, kidding. We'll have a test time on, you know, I would never do that because I would probably fail myself. Anyway, there was one guy named Ezekiel Cheever. He's kind of well known. He taught in this schools for 70 years. And I mean, he was known as like that typical, hard, tough, stern, don't mess with me. I mean, he demanded excellence from his kids. And the kids, of course, would not like that. But the parents did, and he earned almost double what normal teachers would make because people were like begging to get into his school or for him to be the teacher. Most of his young people ended up going to Harvard. I mean, he pushed them to do that. So this is kind of where it started. We just had, who was in charge of education? The parents. It was up to the home. If you want to teach your kid at home, teach them. Or if parents want to get together and pay a teacher, great. If the parents want to send them to a dame school with an older lady, teach them, great. It was the parents that were making the call. It was the parents that were choosing to fund. And as we're going to see here as things go on, step by step, we're going to get closer and closer to, instead of you choosing, it's now compulsory. You must. And that didn't originate in America, by the way. We'll talk about that as well. Where'd that even come from? And we're going to look at, it's crazy. A lot of these guys that we're going to talk about went over to Europe and got infatuated with, wow, look at this new idea. And they dragged it over here and ruined the country every time. Places like Germany, Prussia, they would go there. And one that we're going to look at, George Counts, actually went to Russia several times, and he was infatuated with communism. Now, that's just the guy I want writing our textbooks. But that's what happened. And we'll talk about it. I've read his little book, Dare the World Build a New Social Order. We're going to talk about how he did that. Very secretly and very quietly in a process of 20 to 30 years, we'll get there. Now let's move on and talk about a few other things, this New England background. So what about the beginning of compulsory education? Now again, parents choose versus you have to go. Here's the Massachusetts Act of 1642. A lot of you study history and some of you are having flashbacks to high school and U.S. history, and you're like, no, I don't want to go over this anymore. But I hope that you see why it's important. The parents, now here's, I can even handle this. This isn't a problem. The law didn't say you have to go to school. It said, parents, you have to teach your children. That's a little different. It's saying, we've got to have an educated generation. We've got to have an educated country. And, you know, yeah, we're busy in the pioneering. We're trying to establish the country. We're over here, you know, some of these people were doing things to survive and building cities and all these. But they didn't want the education of the next generation to kind of drop to the back seat. So here's a few things about this. It affirmed the value of literacy, and there were several things in the Massachusetts Act of 1642. They wanted three things for their kids. This was in the Act. Teach the children an occupation. Now, that's important. Now, we don't see a lot of emphasis on that today, do we? I love those memes. It's like, here's one guy. And he, you know, he's in $120,000 worth of debt after college, a bachelor's degree, and he's living in his mom's, grandma's basement because he can't find a job in philosophy. Then you got other dude who's making $80,000 a year, graduated from high school, learned a trade, and is up, you know, welding a skyscraper or something. You know, those kind of are funny. I'm not undermining college. I think college is important for those. But I think what God calls you to is what's important. God wants you to go to college. Go to college! And do great at it. And do your best. If God says, hey, I feel that you need to enter this field over here, or you need to do this, or you need to be a painter. Amen. Right, Mr. Woods? A painter. We'll step in. don't do it, whatever. And then if you do, don't tell anybody you know how. So, right? Or, you know, Mr. Whitney back there, he graduated, we always pick on Mr. Whitney. He's like, I graduated from the School of Applied Studies. You know, he went to Bob Jones, but the School of Applied Studies. But you know what? He knew what God wanted him to be. He wanted to learn carpentry and building. And he went on missions trips and did it. And I want to tell you, he's been able to use that for a blessing to this ministry, to missionaries, and to others. That's what God said to do, and he did it. So don't undermine that at all. Do what the Lord calls you to do. But they wanted them to learn an occupation. I'm excited this year. We're going to try something new for the first time since I've been here. We're doing an auto class. We have someone that knows about, remind me to tell you about someone that has a 60s Mustang. Now I got you excited, you're ready to go. All right, we're going to have a home ec class as well. And then next year we hope we can rotate and have agriculture planting classes with some carpentry in there. We want our kids to learn some of these things as well. You know, kids, they don't even know how to change out an electric outlet. They don't even know what it is. Well, they need to be taught. I'm not demeaning the kids. They need to be taught. We have the opportunity to teach them. Let's teach them. Practical things as well. That was a part of it. They must learn an occupation. Another thing that they focused on was they need to learn to read and to read the Bible and learn salvation. Now, these are the things that this law and that the parents in Massachusetts, this is what they want. Affirm the value of literacy here. Read. It also wanted them to be familiar with the capital laws of the country. Now, those are three important things that they said, you must teach your children these three things. You must teach them an occupation or a trade. You must teach them to read, and you must teach them the laws of the country. Well, I think if we got back to a little bit of that, we'd have a little different mindset going on right now, wouldn't we? Laws, what are those? What's law? Law is doing what I want to do today. It's lawlessness. And that's why we can, you know, destroy and tear down things and want to explode and destroy federal property and then get mad when you protect it. We don't know law. So this is what the kids were learning. And it said, parents, you've got to do this. You've got to do it at home, or you've got to find somebody to do it for you. And if you're derelict in it, you could be fined. You could be fined. Now, that led then to the Massachusetts Act of 1647, and some of you know what it's called, the what? The Luther Satan Act. I just love the way that's written. I've always enjoyed seeing that. So I think I did a little zoom in here of this, if you can read it. If I can read this, it being one chief project of ye old deluder Satan to keep men from the knowledge of scriptures. If you started the paper out with that today, you might as well just get ready for the ACLU and the XYMZ and whoever else wants to come and sue you. They'll be lining up left and right. The deluder wants to deceive you and keep you from knowing what? Reading and math? The scriptures. Boy, if you wrote something like that today, I'm telling you, the liberals' heads would literally implode. As in former times, he's always done it, by keeping you in an unknown tongue, so in these last times, by persuading from the use of tongues, so at least the true sense and meaning of the original might be clouded by false glosses of saint-seeming deceivers, yet learning may not be buried in the grave of faith in your church and commonwealth, the Lord assisting your endeavors. It is therefore ordered every township in this jurisdiction, after the Lord hath increased the number to 50 households, shall forthwith appoint one in their town to teach children to write and read. Because if they don't learn to read, they're not going to learn the scriptures. Because the old deluder's out there deceiving, and he wants to prevent children from reading. That's basically what this says. Now, if we have time, and this may take forever, I don't know, I may not even get half what I want done. We're going to look at a more recent, well, I say more recent, in the last half of the 1900s, the whole language. You ever heard of whole language? And we're going to talk about that a little bit. I'm sorry, people get mad at me. What is that, simply? It is an attack of Satan on reading. On reading. I mean, they do crazy things like, you're reading along here, and you see there's a picture to help you, okay, because you don't know phonics. You can't put the word together yourself. There's the word horse. And the kid says pony because he looks at the picture. He doesn't know what that word is, so he assumes it's pony. That kid is not to be corrected. Now, I will say in the last maybe 10 to 15 years, that has fallen a little out of vogue, but that's what happened in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, the whole Fun with Dick and Jane series, all that stuff. All of it is full of that. If we have time to get to there, we will. But the Satan does not want us reading, because that's how God revealed Himself to us. In the written word, the Rhema versus the Logos, the expressed written word, God's given us the ability to read. He's given us a mind to learn, and He wants us to take His word that He's preserved. And I just believe and trust God that it's preserved, and I can pick up a copy of it and I can read it, because I can then learn about Christ for myself. I can learn about salvation. I can learn about the doctrines. I can study the Bible on my own, but the old deluder Satan doesn't want you to do that. And these people in Massachusetts in 1647 realized it, that if they don't read, Satan wins. And they made a law. They made a law that you have got to, it's one of the chief projects of Satan, to prevent people. So when they got into 50 households, they had to appoint one person to read and write. When they got to 100 households in a town, they had to establish a Latin grammar school. Now, the government is telling the households what to do. Now, they're not running it themselves at this point, but they're at least saying, we've got to teach these kids to read and to write. Latin was important to get into college. Getting into college, a lot of it was for illiterate clergy. That was what they wanted to do. Now, yes, kept it in Latin. There was not a vernacular. And when Wycliffe translated it from the Latin to the English, the first translation in English, boy, that just sent the sparks flying. William Tyndale, who gave his life translating the Greek and Hebrew into English, they killed him. They hated Wycliffe so much they dug him up. I mean, the man had to hide in an office in Oxford. When I went to Oxford, I get like, you know, Megan knows, I'll be driving down the road, like, man, look at that mountain. That is amazing. It's beautiful. And she's like, yep, mm-hmm. Now I'm like swerving off the road. This is awesome. You know, I get overexcited about things. I actually got to see the room where Wycliffe did his study. And I was just like, you know, to me that was just a huge thing. That was awesome. He sat there and he translated. They hated him. Years later, they went up the Council of Constance, I think, in the early 1400s. They went and dug him up and burned his bones. They hated him so much. I mean, they don't want, keep people dumb. What do you think's going on today? Keep them dumb. Let's let them sit at home on unemployment and then extend it so they can watch the fake news that nonstop tells them one thing. Fear, 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 fear. Now, don't misunderstand me. I know that this virus thing is real. I'm not saying the virus isn't real. But I tell you what people are doing with it is not right. Not right. But that's my, I guess, little opinion. But fear. Just live in fear. We have a verse for our school this year, 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. God hasn't given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. So we need wisdom to deal with the real virus. We need a sound mind to deal with that. But we're not going to live in fear. We're going to live in His power. We're going to have a sound mind. We're going to ask God to give it to us. And we're going to do it in love, okay? If there's someone that doesn't agree 100% with me, great, no problem. Now, sadly, the other side's not going to give you that luxury. They're going to shame you and whatever else and get angry at you for disagreeing with them, because you're not allowed to disagree with them, but they can disagree with you, and you have to be gracious, but they don't have to be. You know all that stuff. I don't even know where I was going with this. Yeah, keep people illiterate. Just listen. Don't read, don't research, don't study, just listen. And whenever you hear, it's just fact, true. It's been an old, old ploy, hasn't it? They realized it in the early 1600s. So this was the first law for that schools need to be established. But here's the thing. It was done on a local level where the local families would get together and they did it. They still did it. So the government realized the need for education, said you've got to do it, but left it up to the families to then do it. I mean, I can handle that, you know. It's better than what happens next. So let's talk a little bit about some of these schools here and some of the things they did in New England. And again, here's the curriculum. We'll put a few things up here. A Bible, a horn book, and the New England primer. Maybe you've heard of some of those things. Maybe you've heard of that. I don't know any of you that have ever studied any type of history of when I see the horn book, I get scared and think it's a paddle and my dad's coming after me or something. I mean, how'd you like to be a teacher with that thing? You're not reading. Oh, no, we would never condone that. Somebody was talking to me last night. He said he learned to spin in circles because his dad, all he does is counterclockwise. He says, Dad, don't you ever do that. I said, well, I know what you're feeling, buddy. I've been there many, many times. I was grabbing onto the bedspread and memorizing the pattern and getting wailed on. I don't know why. I was a pretty good kid, you know. I never imagined that I would pick on my sisters and be mean. But anyway, I see the horn book and I start getting nervous again. It had the letters of the alphabet. Maybe you can see it there. And what's on the bottom? The Lord's Prayer. Try that today. Now I know they get together in these little circles and they say it after ball games sometimes. And it's, to me, it's almost to the point of the vain repetition. Father, I'm here. Yeah, okay. Amen. And go live like the devil. Well, I'm okay. That makes no sense. Don't even say the prayer then. Fine. It's like I don't even. Well, maybe I shouldn't say that. They shouldn't even play the anthem. They don't support it. They don't agree with it. They don't deserve to hear it. I'm too brash, I guess. Anyway, the horn book had that. They had a Bible. A Bible as a curricular book? Wow. It's people's problems. If they wanted to learn to read, they used the Bible to learn to read. And then they had that New England primer, however you want to say it. It came out later in 1690. It was a national textbook for 210 years until the early 1900s, about 3 million copies, had a lot of spiritual truth. If anybody ever read anything in a primer, I have a copy. If anybody would like to see it, I'm more than happy to let you borrow it. It is really neat. Every letter of the alphabet was associated with something scriptural. You know, the famous, like, in Adam's fall, we sinned all. And they would have a big letter that from that statement. And they were associating letters with that. That's why I love the K-5ers when they learn their Bible verses. And they have, for every letter of the alphabet, they have a Bible verse. What is A? All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. B, and I can't remember them all, even though I've been to some kindergarten practices. And I did it when I was 5 years old, but that was eons ago. We won't talk about that. But go right through. What do we do? We're going to learn a letter and associate it with a verse. Why? Because we got to hide God's word in our heart. And that's the job of a teacher, isn't it? A Christian teacher. So we should be doing and promoting. The New England Primer had all that in it. It had a basic alphabet. It had a rhymed alphabet. It was all based on the Bible. It even had a catechism. It had theological questions in it. Now, can you imagine? I'm six, and I've learned all the doctrines. You know, what is this? That's what they were doing. Way different level of learning than we see going on today. They even had other things that they would use. Maybe some of you have heard of, well, maybe you haven't. There was a poem called Day of Doom, 220 verses long. 224 verses long. And it went into detail about what happens at the end of your life and that you're going to stand before God. Students had to memorize it. How'd you like that, Brother Grover? 224 verses? Tough one. I think you can handle it, though. You're pretty good. He's got it going on. I'd just be like, you know, and when I was a kid, we had a competition in one of my classes of who could learn the most of Psalm 119. And we went up there one at a time and we started going. And the first mistake, you had to sit down. And I got to 50 or 60 something and I missed one word and I had to sat down. And you know, that really made me happy, Chris. And imagine, you know, some girl beat me. Man. I want to win big league, but didn't win. Anyway, we used to do stuff like that. We used to learn catechisms when I was in elementary school. And we'd stand up and give a presentation to the parents about what sin is and who God is and answer all these, who made you? God made me. What else did God make? God made all things. Y'all ever heard of some of that? Am I the only one? Yeah, there's a whole thing. My brain, of course, I can't remember them all. We had a competition there, too, of who could go the farthest. I came in second, again. Moving on. But can you imagine learning those kind of things as a six-year-old? I mean, we have so far drifted from what rigorous education is. And today, people get mad if you make them memorize one Bible verse. I'm like, it's 15 words, people. But I know every Fortnite code there is. It's a verse. Come on. I tell you what, you ever want to hear something impressive? Was when Mrs. Erickson have her first grader stand up here in chapel, and I'm sitting there, my head's spinning because I'm old now. They're rattling off John chapter 3, verse 14 through 19. I mean, big old section with long verses in it. And they're just up there. I'm like, I'm still back on God's love the world. He gave, you know, and they're up on verse 19 going at it perfectly. It's amazing. Kids can do it. We ought to push them a little bit. We're doing a little coddle mode. And sadly, today, parents get mad. You're mad that I require a standard as a teacher. It's too hard. Well, be quiet and work. I know you can go to the extreme and stuff. I always tell the story. I feel kind of bad. The first time I taught chemistry all the way through with that new Abeka book a couple years ago, we had a final exam at the end of the first semester. I just got into it. I make my own exams. I got into that thing and I was making the test and putting all these cool things and all the stoichiometry, and I was going at it, and the test ended up being like 11 pages. I thought, well, they have an hour and a half. They'll be all right. You know, gave them the test. I mean, the girls were literal tears just streaming down their faces. I was like, oopsie. Just going to collect those and curb the grades. I apologize. You know, that's the too extreme. But you have to be humble enough to realize you messed that up and fix it. I won't give that test again. But, you know, you can be to the extreme of hard and just hard for pride's sake. I'll show them kids. No, you don't want to be like that either. But you want to demand things. You want to have standard. We're going to meet this. And you know something about kids? They want to know what the standard is and what the expectations are. That's fair. We don't have to be fair to kids. You better be. Because kids want to do it most of the time. Oh, my teacher, Mrs. Erickson, wants me to know those four verses. Oh, I can't wait to please Mrs. Erickson. They'll do it. Dr. Watt wants me to memorize 30 of those chemical symbols either way for a test. Oh, I'm going to get it. Boy, they'll get their flashcards and they're just going. Great. They want to know what's expected so they can meet it. We're going to keep going into this. We're going to talk next time about Horace Mann. Horace Mann, the father of public education, and what influenced him, because he's going to go from, instead of the government mandating it and then the families doing it, he's going to turn it into the government mandates it and the government controls it. And you better get in line. And that's where it all started shifting. We'll get into that next week. Father, just thank you for this time and thank you for the good attention of our people. We just pray that this will be beneficial as we study education and our role as a parent as well, and that it will help us. Lord, the school here is a very integral part of our ministry, and so we would love our people to know and to pray and to keep in mind the battles that our teachers face so they can pray for them and help them. Help us, Lord, in this study, and be with our service now in Christ's name. Amen. Thank you all for your good attention. I appreciate it.